This is Soft Power Radio on KWNK 97.7 LPFM. Today we are in conversation with Ali Sharko. Ali is a PhD student in the Department of Psychology at UNR. Over the course of the past year, she has hosted several self-love workshops. These interactive self-care trainings were created by Ali to give people in the community tools to better understand and nourish their psychological and general well-being. All of the activities and exercises Ali employs are founded on her own years-long experience in education, primarily with acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT.
Well, I've been in Reno since 2009, and when I moved here, I started my undergrad degree at UNR and got a bachelor's degree in psychology. And I was like a hyper nerd, and so I was a research assistant in all of these different labs, and I tutored kids with autism, I worked with adults with disabilities, and I also started being a research assistant in Steve Hayes' lab, and he is a co-founder of Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. So I started to volunteer in his lab, and I started to attend some of his Acceptance and Commitment Therapy boot camps, or ACT boot camps, and then I got into UNR 4 years ago to start my PhD, and from there, I was basically, my job since then has been working with the medical school to help them modify acceptance and commitment therapy into acceptance and commitment training for the med students, and it's all focused about teaching them resiliency and how to handle the stressors of life, because medicine is inherently stressful to be in. So I attended more ACT boot camps, and then I took an ACT class from Steve Hayes, and basically after 6 or 7 years of really, really studying this stuff, I finally felt confident that now I had something to contribute to the community. And I've always been a part of Holland. Even when I moved here in 2009, I immediately met Britt and got involved, and I was a program director there for about 6 months, like way back when, and attended shows and art galleries, and I've always wanted to contribute something to Holland, but I stopped playing music a while ago, and I don't really make visual art or anything like that, but now after like 6 years of studying ACT, I finally felt like now I was competent enough to share it with others. And when I thought about the people who I would want to share it with, it just made sense that I would share it with people at Holland, because Holland has given me so much. So it's kind of my own, like, it started out as like my own kind of values-based action to give this stuff back to the kids at Holland, especially because I remember when I was super young in high school in those early college years, how overwhelming life could be and how stressful it is. And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in drugs and alcohol or just doing a lot of things you regret because you don't understand your emotions really yet, or how to be on your own without your parents and managing your emotions. And then, you know, I've also know some people who, unfortunately, they're no longer with us because when they were young, they took their life. And so the nice thing that I like about ACT is it's kind of all-encompassing, and it helps with depression, it helps with anxiety, it helps with suicidal ideations, and it helps with bipolar, schizophrenia, OCD, like all of it's a trans-diagnostic approach. So I'm hoping that by giving these workshops to people in the community, that it could, if someone really is in need of mental health services, that it can kind of be like the tipping point, and I can give them resources for if they need more. Or if it's just like an everyday person who just wants a little booster in life, that it could also be that for them. When I was working with the kids with autism and the adults with disabilities, I was always most interested in training the trainer and kind of like management styles and how can we apply behavior analysis to everyday, typically functioning people? And then that's what got me interested in Steve Hayes' land, because he is, again, the co-founder of ACT, but also a co-founder of this school of psychology called Contextual Behavior Science. And the whole mission of CBS, or Contextual Behavior Science, is to basically make the world a better place and alleviate human suffering for everyone. And so they developed a theory of language and cognition that at this moment in time, it feels pretty solid to me, that can actually address the everyday problems that everyone deals with. And so I started kind of applying ACT to myself and my own problems, and I saw a lot of results with my own kind of symptoms of depression and anxiety, and I used to have a lot of panic attacks, and I've always kind of bordered the edge of having difficulties with drinking, and I've been able to apply ACT to all of those things, and it's continued to help me. And so I think because I've applied it to myself and I've seen the utility, I'm like super bought in, which then made me want to just like study it and figure out like, why is this helping me and what really is happening that's opening my world. And so that's led into this line of research that I've been doing, and it's led into me doing these workshops. All the ladies, if you feel me, help me sing it out.
I can't believe I believed everything we had would last. So young and naive of me to think she was from your past. Silly of me to dream of one day having your kids. Love is so blind, it feels right when it's wrong. I can't believe I fell for your schemes. I'm smarter than that.
That was Me, Myself, and I by Beyoncé. You are listening to 97.7 KWNK LPFM. Today, we are in conversation with Ali Sharko.
The Self-Love Workshops, they are three-hour experiential trainings where I apply basically the training technology that I've been working on at UNR as a graduate student. I provide that same evidence-based training to community members, and I try to make it really accessible and affordable, which is why I keep the cost of it low. And it's, yeah, people show up, and I kind of have like a three-hour curriculum and just guide them through different exercises that the science supports. And I also have been doing the Self-Love Club, which anyone who attends a self-love workshop, they're invited to attend the Self-Love Club. And that's more of like an informal one-hour meeting, usually once a month, where people can show up and just talk about what's working and what's not working from the stuff that I taught them at the workshop. The workshops at Holland are, it's normally like me sitting in a room with like 20 to 30 people in this group training setting, teaching them the skills. So when people go to the workshops, it's not therapy. I never ask anyone to reveal any personal information. I give people resources for where they can find like an ACT-trained therapist, but the workshops are more just, they're more broad, and I just try to cover kind of like the tip of the iceberg of ACT and just give everyone a general overview, and we get a little bit into all of the different processes, but I don't go super into it. So people leave the workshop having like some good skills, but then they also have a bunch of resources for if they're really in the pit and they need like really heavy services, then they know how they can go get them. So the purpose of acceptance and commitment therapy or training, just the purpose of ACT, is to increase a person's psychological flexibility. And this is the ability to notice the events that are occurring in your life while they're happening in the present moment from lots of different viewpoints. So noticing what's happening in the present moment, but also being able to look at the present moment experience from like how your past self might look at the situation, how your future self might be looking at the situation, how someone else sitting in the room with you would be looking at the situation. So using perspective taking, and to also consistently choose to engage in values-based actions without getting too attached to some of those negative thoughts and feelings that might show up in the presence of pursuing your values. ACT is part of what's known as like third wave psychology in as far as like the Western sense goes. So there was the first wave of behavioral psychologists, which started with Watson, and it was very, very, basically they considered the subject matter of psychology to be anything that was observable. So that means that your thoughts and feelings and emotions that another person can't observe wouldn't be considered to be a part of the field. But then a lot of people had a problem with that because, you know, everyone can agree that we have thoughts, feelings, and emotions and a lot of interesting things happening within the skin that others can't observe. So that led kind of for first wave psychology to then develop into second wave, which we now refer to today as like traditional cognitive behavioral therapy. And I'm not as fluent with this second wave approach, so I'm going to do my best to explain it, but basically what makes it distinct is it does take into consideration thoughts, feelings, and emotions, but the general therapeutic approach is to try to get people to change the content of their thoughts. So if you're having a bad thought, the main emphasis is, well, don't have the bad thought. Just think of a positive thought instead. Or let's really question the rationality of that thought. Like, really question it and examine it, and then you'll see that it's kind of a silly thought, so you should just have the positive thought. That's been my understanding of it, the way it's been taught to me. But then in kind of like the 70s and the 80s, there was some research that came out that showed that actually the more you try to resist having bad thoughts and emotions, you actually just have them at a higher frequency. So it doesn't really work to say, like, just don't have the bad thought. So then this came about the third wave, which is considered. So with this third wave approach, ACT is kind of a part of it, but there's also mindfulness-based stress reduction that's a part of it, and dialectical behavioral therapy that's a part of it. And the third wave is all about not changing necessarily the content of the thoughts and feelings that you're having, but changing the way that they function or work for you in the everyday world. So it's not a bad thing to have bad thoughts or bad feelings and emotions. We all have those things, but it's about learning to have those things without them kind of controlling and dominating your entire life. So ACT is kind of in the third wave, and it was originally referred to as comprehensive distancing, but now the current version of it is called ACT, and there's about 30 to 40 years of solid scientific research behind it, and there's been over 250 randomized controlled trials comparing its effectiveness to other treatments. So it's heavily supported in as far as an evidence-based approach goes. And like I said, it's transdiagnostic, so it's not really focused on a specific whatever category, like the DSM or that diagnostic statistical manual will categorize you in. It's kind of it's functional. So it's just about, regardless of whatever you've been diagnosed with, it's about how are those thoughts and feelings that you're having functioning for you in your everyday world, and what techniques or strategies can you use to learn how to kind of hold space for those things and still move in the direction of something that's important to you.
Off work in the morning and up at the crack of dawn. All my money worries, wherever I go, come along. Worry's a bully that just won't let me be. Trying to keep me busy, tussling and struggling. No home since the fire, me and the ash can't settle down. Unsure of where I'm bound, so I sink another round. Placebo for pain, and there's no one for to blame. I refuse to accept that my work is all in vain. Worry's a bully that just won't let me be. Trying to keep me busy, tussling and struggling.
That was Going Gets Tough by the Growlers. You are listening to 97.7 KWNK LPFM. Today, we are in conversation with Ali Sharko.
Right now, the definition of whether or not to classify it as ACT therapy or ACT training is kind of broad or loose. It's not very technical yet, but generally the way that it's defined is, yeah, if you're like sitting in a one-on-one setting with someone and you're a clinical psychologist or an MFT, then you normally refer to it as therapy, but in kind of these workplace settings or academic settings or community settings, it tends to be referred to as training. And I think specifically because I'm not having like a conversation with one person in the moment and then immediately applying any of the six skills that I teach. That's why it would be more training versus therapy. Whereas therapy, it's more like talk therapy. So the patient or client, they're talking about the problems and stressors of their life, and in the moment, the ACT therapist will intervene and start to try to increase their psychological flexibility. So it's referred to as like dancing around the hexaflex, which is the image that's used to display the six skills. So an ACT therapist is very interactive with their patient, trying to make as much change as they can in the moment in that one-on-one setting. But in a training setting, it's a little more rigid and structured as far as, it's kind of like taking a class. Like, okay, now we're going to talk about this skill, and now we're going to go through some exercises, and here's some homework that you can complete on your own to continue to work on that skill. But it's not as tailored and customized as a one-on-one setting. It's broken into six core processes, but I just refer to it as six different skills. So I teach six different skills in the workshop. And so the first one is contact with the present moment, which is something more and more people are beginning to become familiar with mindfulness kind of having a spotlight in our culture right now. So just very simple present moment exercises. And then once you learn how to be more aware of the present moment, then we talk about diffusion, which is this healthy detachment from your thoughts and feelings. So noticing kind of the arbitrariness of language and learning how to not get too rigidly stuck on a thought or feeling that you're having. So if you do something embarrassing and you have the thought, oh no, I'm a really bad person, like learning how to create a healthy distance between you as a whole individual and you having the thought, oh no, I'm a really bad person. And then acceptance is more, it's not really, sometimes it can get misinterpreted for kind of just like blindly, like being, just like being a pushover to life and just, but that's not really what it's about. Acceptance is more, it's more about like understanding that there are going to be things in life that are stressful and difficult. And some of those things that are stressful and difficult, if they are in service of your values, then it's good to have some willingness and acceptance of the fact that you're going to experience some aversive things. So kind of leaning into an aversive event, if it is in service of something that's truly important to you, is more of what acceptance in ACT is all about. And then there's perspective taking, which I kind of talked about. And then we also talk a lot about values because that's a core element of ACT. And then committed actions. So those are the actions that you take in service of your values. So I talk about all six of those processes during the workshop. And we do a lot of different kind of eyes closed guided exercises and some other kind of experiential exercises. Because I'm trying to move away from therapy and get it more to be like training, I'm trying to figure out ways that I can take like these traditionally eyes closed therapeutic exercises and kind of gamify them or turn them into little fun team activity games that still are consistent with the ACT model, but maybe a little less therapeutic. Because it's really hard to get people to open up, especially if I invite 20 to 30 strangers to sit in a room with me for 3 hours. I really don't want to trigger anyone, but I want people to get the kind of ideas and concepts. So I'm trying to move for each workshop is different. And I learn from each one of them. And I think in the beginning, I was still kind of being too therapeutic and too heavy. So every workshop, I try to get it lighter and lighter and lighter, but still maintain like the integrity of the ACT model. So it's been like a fun challenge for me to watch the workshops evolve. Well, I've seen a lot of, you know, like motivational speakers or life coaches are popping up here and there. And a lot of, I'm not that those things aren't valuable, but sometimes I feel like I kind of err on the side of caution as far as when I do this work, because it can be transformative. And so if someone has recently experienced, you know, heavy trauma, I am not a clinical psychologist. I'm not trained for that. I don't have the credentials for it. But I do have a lot of training in behavior science and acceptance and commitment training specifically, but I'm just not a clinical psychologist, and I don't know the histories of everyone that's walking into the door in that room. And so what I've learned is if I start too heavy, too fast, people, like if someone has recently experienced trauma in their life, they're basically an open sore wound, you know? And it's not the most appropriate thing for me to then dive straight into really heavy content, because I could just be kind of poking at their wound. If someone's already kind of teetering towards the edge of something, I don't want to get too heavy too fast with them and have them maybe not hear all of the content that I'm saying, because there's just so much other work that needs to be done with them. But I could, so that's why I'm trying to focus on keeping things like here's an introduction to ACT, and you can take what works for you and leave the rest behind if you want. And if you are really struggling and recently experienced a traumatic event, here are some resources for you to get one-on-one services with someone who can help you kind of clean that wound in a healthy, science-based, supported way.
Travel 70 states, start moving around, make me feel better. I tried to let go my lover, thought if I was alone then maybe I could recover. To write it away, I'll cry it away.
Don't you cry, babe.
That was Cranes in the Sky by Solange. You are listening to 97.7 KWNK LPFM. Today, we are in conversation with Ali Sharko.
I think it's been successful, which is kind of why I keep doing it. And my whole thing with this, because I am a full-time graduate student, this kind of just turned into, yeah, like this values-based way to give back to the community as something fun on the side that I can do. But because I have been receiving such positive feedback from people, it's motivated me to keep going. And so the first workshop that I did was actually at Bad Apple Vintage in December of 2018. And I got some really quick, immediate feedback about the structure of that workshop and basically everyone was kind of huddled sitting around in a circle in Bad Apple, and I could tell that it wasn't accessible, like it's not comfortable for people to sit on the ground for that long, and it wasn't acceptable or as accessible to some of the older people that were showing up who had like some back and leg issues. So then the next workshop was when I reached out to Holland and we started doing it in the server pool. And then with that second workshop, I had people kind of sitting there doing a lot of written worksheets in the 3-hour session that we had together. But again, some of those worksheets kind of ask you to reveal, like to really think about some super personal things in your life. And I felt like not everyone is kind of comfortable just right off the bat, you know, writing the story of their life while sitting in a room full of strangers, and sitting at desks or tables just seemed kind of awkward. So I immediately kind of just like took the feedback from that one and changed the future workshops. So now the current structure is it's 3 hours, but everyone sits in a circle. And I even have like seat pads now because it's so long to sit. And I break it up. So we'll probably do some stuff for like 40 minutes and then we take a break and then 40 minutes and then a break and then 40 minutes. And I don't do the written worksheets anymore, but I do provide the worksheets in the packet that I provide. So, and I have like kind of like a 3-week homework assignment that people can do on their own time if they want to do the worksheets. And, now I've just gotten the feedback that people do really like the eyes closed exercises. I've gotten good feedback that apparently I have a good kind of therapeutic voice for doing the eyes closed exercises, and people who have attended the workshops have been showing up to the self-love club, and a lot of the people who are continuing to show up to the workshops are friends of people who have already attended them, so that's been cool. And I've also just kind of like, you know, I try to be a part of the community, so I've had people who I don't necessarily know personally even come up to me and say like, oh, I attended your workshop and it helped me so much. So I think it's that feedback that keeps me going. Apparently I'm helping people and they seem to like it, so I'm just going to keep going as long as people keep telling me that they're enjoying the workshop. The work that I do at the med school, a lot of it has been figuring out how to customize and tailor a combination of online trainings and in-person trainings to the medical students using the ACT model. And so the difficult aspect of that is their curriculum is so jam-packed with content that they have to learn for their board exams that they have to take. So we've been kind of charged with the task to give them ACT, but give it to them in like the most efficient, timely manner possible. And that means that I only have one opportunity in their first year of medical school and one opportunity in the third year of medical school to give them any exposure to ACT. Right now, we're continuing to build it, but as of right now, it's very limited. So what's nice about the workshops is I've been giving the self-love workshops about 3 times a year, and the workshops have been a good place for me to kind of pilot and experiment and test out some of the ACT content that I get exposed to throughout the year in preparation for the curriculum that we implement at the med school. So I get a lot of good immediate feedback from community members on the exercises that work and don't work, and how they all pan out, again, with trying to move things away from this traditionally therapeutic approach into a training context. It's been a good little piloting environment for me. So that when I do take the stuff back to the med school, what the med students are seeing is kind of a little more hashed out, edited, revised version of the stuff that people in the community workshops are coming into contact with. And it's all about teaching people how they can live a life that's in line with their own individual values. And so this is kind of another reason why I wanted to start bringing this stuff to the community, because there's kind of been, in addition to there being like a rise of mindfulness in our culture, which is great and I'm all about, there's also been this rise of, you know, self-care in our culture and how important self-care is, which I'm also all about. But what kind of makes me feel a little uncomfortable is I see a lot of really great people care a lot about self-care, and then they kind of go on Pinterest or they go on Instagram and they see all of these lists of self-care is this. You absolutely have to sleep 8 hours a night every single night. You better be drinking, you know, 64 ounces of water every single day. You better make sure you get 30 minutes of cardio every single day. And you better make sure you spend like once a week that you're going out in nature. You know, like you've probably seen these checklists or these long self-care lists. And I'm all about it and I think those are great. But I feel like sometimes in life, self-care doesn't look like that, and it depends on your circumstance. And we also, I don't know where the science or evidence there is. Like, obviously, there's, like, nutrition evidence that supports those practices. But as far as, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is sometimes we come into contact with things in our life that are just more important than making sure we get those 8 hours of sleep that night, you know, or just more, they're just more important in that moment than making sure we got our 30 minutes of cardio, you know, and it's important for us to be cognizant of that and flexible and move with like the flow of life, the way that life actually happens, versus trying to follow all of these lists that people are posting on the internet and then constantly failing at those lists and then beating ourselves up about not being able to be the perfect human who can accomplish everything on this list that some random person on the internet posted. So a big thing with my approach in the workshops is I never tell anyone what their values are, and I don't want to tell them, like, if you want to really be in line with self-care and self-love, then you better do X, Y, and Z. It's more of like I'm trying to give you the very broad kind of direction and steps and tips that you can take to figure out what is self-love for you and what's self-care for you. It's not my place to tell you what self-care is for you, but I can give you some like values clarification exercises to help you figure out, like, is seeing your family once a week really in service of self-love? Or are you just doing that because someone on the internet posted and said that you better be hanging out with your family all day, every day? You know what I mean? I felt like before I got into grad school, it was really easy for me to eat super clean and exercise and drink a lot of water and sleep and get all these and have like a very well balanced, high functioning, happy life. And then grad school hit me and some of those healthy habits fell to the wayside. And then before I was really practicing ACT, it was really easy for me to then kind of get in this downward spiral of beating myself up about not doing the things that I should be doing. And now what I've learned through my own practice of ACT is that because I'm in grad school, my stressors ebb and flow, and I have seasons of life where there's just absolutely no way I'm going to make it to the gym for a couple weeks because my schedule's too crazy. And now I have these acceptance skills and diffusion skills to get me through those chaotic moments. And I know that I'm like, yes, I'm not going to the gym, but I am doing this other activity which is in service of learning for me right now. And then I have this perspective taking to know, like, it's not that I'm not a healthy person, it's just in this moment with the circumstances I've been dealt, I have to focus on this right now. And I know that I'll get back to that healthy gym activity once this chaotic season has passed. And so that's kind of the mindset that I want to help people with, is like, you can't necessarily control when you're going to be hit with a storm in life, but you can take these skills with you when you're hit with that storm so you can get through it and come out of it on the other side still in a pretty well, in a healthy place, rather than kind of letting the storm just like destroy you and now you have to rebuild yourself up.
Sure. they stood there above me, being flanked on each side. I felt no need to fear them, no reason to hide. So I reached up to touch, but they faded too soon, yet their mouths still remain and stack up towards the moon. How that ladder of mouth waved so soft in the night, and I looked up in awe at that beautiful sight. And I dreamt about climbing into the night sky.
That was When I Was Done Dying by Dan Deacon. You are listening to 97.7 KWNK LPFM. Today, we are in conversation with Ali Sharko.
I've been studying psychology for 10 years, and I've been a human for 29 years. And my experience is pain is always around the corner. And so rather than trying to continue to push pain away and act like it's not a reality of our life, the ACT approach is kind of like, let's open up to pain, let's embrace it. And if we're going to feel pain, which is inevitable, maybe we can figure out what we want to do with our lives so at least we're feeling pain in service of our values, in service of what's truly important to us. And I think that's why the evidence behind it has been so strong, because it's very pragmatic and it's like kind of once you learn these skills, you can apply them to any area of your life, and no matter how heavy those events do get. One of the things that really drew me into ACT is that one of the like best seller books about ACT is a self-help book. It's called Get Out of Your Mind and Into Your Life, and it was written by Steve Hayes. And there's some research that shows that just going through this workbook is enough to increase your mental health. But the thing that kind of opens that book up, and normally you see this written in the first few pages of a lot of ACT text, is that ACT takes this kind of perspective that suffering is a normal, inevitable part of the human experience that we all have. And unfortunately, seeking out mental health services has been stigmatized in our society, and it's kind of perceived as if you are struggling with your mental health or you are coming into contact with suffering, that there's something wrong with you or you're abnormal or it's wrong. And historically, a lot of people kind of like the first person that they go to when they have, you know, maybe some symptoms of depression or anxiety is they're going to see a physician, a medical doctor, who may recommend that they see a psychiatrist, who may do some version of ACT or second wave cognitive therapy or third wave cognitive behavioral therapy, but they also prescribe them medication. And a lot of And I know not everyone agrees. I do think I do know people who, yes, 100% medication has helped them and made their life much more functional and better for them. But I also know people who were prescribed medication specifically with the agenda of trying to numb them and reduce the amount of suffering that they experience. But it doesn't really solve the problem, because suffering is it's a normal, inevitable part of the human experience. But I think there's a lot of kind of factors to why it's been stigmatized in our society. You know, we live in a patriarchal society. There's toxic masculinity. Men have been taught from an early age, suck it up, boys don't cry, hold in all your feelings, you're not allowed to emote. If you emote, you're a sissy, there's something wrong with you. So our culture is definitely dealing with the side effects of that. And I see that I've seen the men in my life have struggled the most, because they have kind of been punished and socially conditioned from an early age that their suffering isn't acceptable, and them feeling the full spectrum of emotion isn't allowed. And so they kind of bottle it up, and then what you see with the literature, again, the more you try to push it down, the more it pops back up, and the more it kind of dominates your life. And then what happens is then maybe you do try to seek out prescription medication, or you turn to drugs and alcohol to numb the pain, or sex, or exercise, or whatever form it comes in, just to immediately try to numb that pain. But then women, you know, there's also mental health seeking stigma for women as well, especially depending on the field that you work in. So if you're a CEO, you know, you're kind of casted as this person who's supposed to be powerful and have everything together. Or if you're a woman working in the military or a woman working in healthcare, there's going to be additional stigmatization towards you being open about your mental health. And so I guess that's also why I'm trying to kind of rebrand this stuff in a way, and provide people with these preventative tools at these workshops. And on top of that, I also give them, in the packet, you get a list of self-help books that you could buy online, and no one has to know that you're buying that book and going through the self-help book. And then I also have a link to a growing body of online resources, so that people can watch YouTube videos in the privacy of their own home if they want. There's an app that you can download on your phone that I recommend that people can use, that no one has to know that you're using So I think with technology, there's more and more ways to get this content to people without them having to go through the daunting stigmatization of coming face to face with another human to work on this stuff. And I'm also hoping that as our culture evolves and we kind of deal with the consequences of toxic masculinity, that this stuff will be more and more accepted. And I think it starts kind of with me and other people doing the similar work that I'm doing, which is just getting it out there and trying to normalize human suffering, basically. And just emphasizing that if we're not robots, we feel feelings, and you can't really understand, my perspective is you can't truly understand pure joy unless you have also experienced pure pain. It's like a double-sided coin, and it's like looking at a photo. If there's not contrast in the photo, you can't really pick up all the rich details of that photo. But unfortunately, there have been forces in our society that have kind of pushed people towards drugs, alcohol, pharmaceuticals, whatever it is, to numb their pain. And behind those forces, you know, kind of marketing saying that you should always feel happy all the time. And if you're not feeling happy all the time, well, clearly there's something wrong with you. So clearly you need to take this to go back to feeling happy all the time. But I've been studying psychology for 10 years, and I've been a human for 29 years. And my experience is pain is always around the corner. And so rather than trying to continue to push pain away and act like it's not a reality of our life, the ACT approach is kind of like, let's open up to pain. Let's embrace it. And if we're going to feel pain, which is inevitable, maybe we can figure out what we want to do with our lives so at least we're feeling pain in service of our values, in service of what's truly important to us. And I think that's why the evidence behind it has been so strong, because it's very pragmatic, and it's like kind of once you learn these skills, you can apply them to any area of your life. I think for me right now, my number one personal goal is to finish my PhD, and my dissertation is actually looking at the impact of ACT on in the med school, which I don't want to get into too much detail on, but I am pursuing my dissertation focused on ACT. And when I graduate, I would love to continue to grow these self-love workshops and to do more of them and to provide kind of these similar workshops to maybe companies and local businesses and do some trainings related to team dynamics and how you can use psychological flexibility to improve like the functioning of an organization. But I'd also like to maybe turn the self-love stuff into some sort of nonprofit where we can provide programs for kids. I'm thinking maybe like after-school programming for kids, or somehow get involved with the school district to help with teacher burnout. I don't really have any like concrete plans yet with the self-love stuff. I kind of want to let it see where it grows organically, but when I graduate, I definitely like to expand it, whether that be in the form of providing similar trainings to companies or whether that be taking kind of the nonprofit route and, starting to apply these skills for middle schoolers and high schoolers and teachers. The next self-love workshop will be September 1st from noon to 3 at the Holland Project Servapool. We ask that you RSVP online to ensure that we have a seat there for you, and you also have a training packet ready to go for you at the workshop. So when you show up, I will be facilitating a 3-hour experiential training. I'll give everyone a training packet. We'll cover what ACT is. We'll cover all 6 skill sets by doing a variety of kind of eyes closed and other kind of activity exercises. And I would say this workshop, it's acceptable for all ages. So whether you're 13 years old or 85 years old, the workshop is open to all ages. And it's for anyone who is interested in self-care or self-development. Maybe you've partied a little too hard for the summer and now you're trying to buckle down and do some work in September or just for the fall season. It would be a great kind of self-check-in to attend. If you've been kind of struggling here and there with the direction that you want your life to go in, this would be a great opportunity for people. And I think that's it.
My friends, I can't. I don't know how.
Today we were in conversation with Ali Sharko. Ali's self-love workshops are experiential training sessions, open to people of all ages and from all walks of life, intended to improve psychological flexibility and teach simple things anyone can do to take better care of themselves.
Like it here, I don't want to leave.
Thanks for listening. Till next time, this was Soft Power Radio.
I just want to ask you some questions about the spaceship.
The count is picked up at 0 minus 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7.